very green things and end up making money. And making money is the only way that all of this is ever going to come to pass. Otherwise, it is nothing but a pipe dream. There are still things that stand in the way of doing this, even if you do make money doing it. And those things are in the political world. We're going to ask a little bit about that and more about what Jim says can be done. If it's real, it's important. His book is free. So go to his website and make, you know, decide for yourself. A lot of people are looking for answers. Jim Bell claims to have one of them. So whatever else you think, do go to his website, www.jimbell.com, download his book, and see for yourself if he's right. If he is, well, that means a lot. We certainly need people like Jim. With what we're facing, we need people like Jim. And I'm curious, Jim, all things said, won't be no country music, won't be no rock and roll. What they really mean is that, we're
toast.
We're toast. Yeah, you got that. We're toast. Straight ahead. So my question is, how dire are the signs that we have right now? I mean, we do have weather changes, Jim. We have problems with our atmosphere. We have concerns about the sun. Just our general environmental situation appears to be dire. How dire?
Well, we can't do anything about the sun, but we can do stuff. We can do something about the Earth. You know, but
yes.
You know, and it is very dire. I mean, I'm not trying to soft pedal it or say, hey, you know, it's not as bad as we think. I think it's probably worse than we think.
Probably worse than we think.
But, you know, our planet, our life support system has been amazingly,
resilient.
Resilient. I mean, it's just, when you really begin to think about it, it's just amazing. Because, I mean,
you're quite right, Jim, but is there a point?
There will be.
Like somebody throws a switch. The human beings are on this planet and exist in a very narrow margin, actually.
Exactly.
Wouldn't take very many degrees one way or the other to virtually make life not sustainable in many areas.
Sure.
So a lot of people believe that one little thing, like the butterfly effect, will be done, just sending everything over the top and causing some terrible climate catastrophe or something ecologically that, will really hurt us.
Well, the ozone layer was only discovered, that it was being reduced was only discovered by accident.
That's right.
I mean, there's probably 10 things going on that we don't even know about yet. But it's like that's what happens is maybe part of our malady as human creatures is we get stuck there. And what I'm trying to say, let's not get stuck there. Let's go to the next level. As long as we're kicking and breathing, if we were, attacked by, some people in our community, we, definitely would defend ourselves and,
yes,
do all those kinds of things. And
going to the next level, Jim, is going to be, absolutely require either a plan like yours that is so obviously profitable that people just do it because people do what saves them money.
Yeah.
And no doubt it would also, since it's probably so late, it's going to require some very difficult decisions by our national politicians.
Well, if they were making the right decisions, it would certainly be a lot easier. But there's, I think I mentioned Roscoe Bartlett. He's a Republican. He's been in office for 30 years,
yes,
or something like that, and he's trumpeting peak oil. And I didn't talk with him, but I talked with his second in command, a woman by the name, I believe, Lisa. And they're very on it, and they're sending me emails about new developments all the time. So it's a great source of information.
I'm sure people like yourself do the calculations, Jim. And I watch the price of gasoline and the price of oil. And it steadily jumps up two or three jumps and then goes back one, and everybody goes, oh, man, cool, it's going down. But then it goes up two or three more jumps. So, it's slowly going up, 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 up.
Yeah.
Where How high does it have to get, Jim, before people begin to do drastic things and take drastic steps?
Well, you know, as it goes up, more people do. It's just, you know, it doesn't make the news. We're more interested in Michael Jackson or something like that, you know, or at least the media is more interested in it.
Well, yes. I have no answer for that.
Yeah.
I don't answer for the media. I don't know what they're doing, some crazy things. But at some point, $3, $5, $6, $7 for a gallon of gasoline, at some point, the world changes. Somewhere before that $7 mark, the world changes.
You know, it's like the frog in the pot story.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes. Exactly.
A guy who actually helped me on the book, he's a noted economist here in San Diego. His name is Dr. Alan Jin, and he's a professor at USD University.
Uh-huh.
And I came to him with this idea, and I don't even know how to do a spreadsheet on a computer. And so he basically plotted in the numbers to do the spreadsheet to represent what we were talking about. And also Dr. Heather Honay, who's her specialty is marketing, but she has a PhD in economics at San Diego State University. You know, so they these people are basically volunteering their time, and they're, I feel honored that they would put the time in.
Well, I'm glad they did. Did they make any such prediction about, as we continue to cascade up, where all of this takes off?
Well, how I first met Dr. Jin was he had a. It was quoted in the newspaper of that every 10 cent rise in the price of gasoline meant $7 million left our county economy each month.
Do that again.
For every 10 cent rise in the price of gasoline, $7 million was exported out of our county's economy each month.
Wow.
So when you look at rises of 50 cents and stuff like that, it's starting to talk about big dollars here.
Yeah, there's never been any question about that. And then there's this oil thing, Jim. Let's talk a little bit about the oil thing. Right now we have an economy that runs on oil. If we were to attach a number to it, I'll bet you, I don't know.
Well, I believe oil is definitely close to 50%, if not 50%. And natural gas is the other bigger, the other big, and I think coal is edging up because of oil going up.
But all of these.
Yeah. Those three things are really the whole ball of wax. I think when the final history of nuclear power is written, it's going to turn out to be a net thermodynamic energy loss.
You really think so?
I really think so. And in my first book, I cited some scientists who were saying the very same thing. I guess people that feel that way are a minority, but when you look at a waste that's going to be around 10,000 years and there's never been peace on the planet.
There is that problem, yes.
For 2 days, it's like, and you think, we're taking that risk for future generations just to power our televisions.
Our TVs are important, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I watch it. I use the same thing for a computer or whatever. We're all sinners, I guess.
Yes. It's big of you to admit that. In other words, you, how about a car? Do you have a car?
I drive a 1989 Geo Metro, but still it's a car. And
you're a Geo Metro fan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I have Geos. That's where we do 95% of our driving. Only very occasionally do we use any of the
three cylinders.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah. XFI. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mine has almost just edging up to 200,000 miles. So, and it's I've never had to do anything to the engine.
Well, I've been suspicious about this, Jim. Actually, I own two Geo Metros, and I must tell you that. Well, the three-cylinder version, what kind of mileage do you think you get, Jim?
I think I'm still getting close to 40.
40.
After all these years.
Yeah, you can get even quite a bit more than that. Depending on
the 47.
Kind of driving you do. But I was always suspicious, suspicious, Jim, that the Geo Metro is no longer sold. I'm very suspicious about that. How about you?
Yeah, well, no, it was definitely a wonderful little, and I'm 6'4", and there's more room for me to sit in that car and drive than there is in most.
Maybe, maybe somebody just said they're a little too good.
You're not making enough money on them.
could that be true? I mean, a car that goes a couple hundred thousand miles, a car that gets 40 or 50 miles or even 60 to the gallon, well, I guess we just can't have that.
Yeah.
So
well, it's this, you know, this gets into the whole issue of does our economy even create wealth? Does it increase the material and energy wealth of our planet? And the answer is no. I mean, even if it's because it's all dependent on these fossil fuels and a non-renewable world. And all you have to do is go to a landfill and watch what's happening there for 5 minutes.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is there's a lot of people making a lot of money on these fossil fuels. There are entire industries and lives and careers based on these fossil fuels and the whole infrastructure that delivers them and lets us burn them. And that's not going to be given up easily, Jim.
Well, there is Shell Solar and BP Solar. I mean, they've got their hand in it.
Well, then let me ask you a hardball question. Right now, in the United States, what percentage of our energy is derived from alternative methods, anywhere from solar to wind to geothermal to whatever? What percentage?
I don't know the exact number, but I would say even if you threw in hydropower,
that's not right. We've got commercial dams, so.
Yeah, but I mean,
go ahead. Throw in hydropower.
I think it's only like 5 or 6%.
5 or 6%. The rest of it
is all fossil fuel.
So, these are the folks that you're up against.
Well, but see, the idea is not to be against them, but to show them a business opportunity. I mean, if they embrace what I'm saying, you know, it could happen much faster. And I don't have any problem with them making profits. You know, I mean, imagine making profits doing something everybody would be applauding you for doing.
But you see, I'm not sure that at the end of the day, what you're talking about would be a profit for Shell or Exxon or those kind of companies. It would be profitable, but not to the end service energy company, see?
Well, you know, it's up to them. They have the investment
up
capital. I invite them to invest in this. You know,
they really hate it when they don't make money.
Yeah.
They just hate it.
When I'm, you know, hopefully in the book, they'll read it and look at it, and they'll see that they can make a lot more money doing the right thing than doing the wrong thing.
Well, at some level, I think that you're correct. But again, I don't think these larger fossil fuel energy companies would look at it the way you're looking at it, Jim.
Well, that gets back to consciousness. You know,
and, well, it also gets back to politics.
Yeah,
in other words, those big companies have a lot of money. They influence the people that are in elected office.
Well, one thing I've been in favor of is publicly financed campaigns on all levels. I mean, here there's a group that's promoting it, and I think it's about $3 or $4 a year per voter. And you get to run candidates who are beholden to the voters instead of beholden to special interests. I think we need to move more. You know, Common Cause and groups like that are talking about these kinds of things. And you know, we have a wonderful constitution. You know, and it, you know, unfortunately, people are trying to shout it down in a lot of cases now.
Yeah, well, I've had a lot of guests on the program, Jim, who recognize the trouble we're in, but they say realistically, our only understood workable savior right now is the nuclear power industry.
Yeah, and
you're not one of those people, are you?
No, I think it's just like it almost shows, you know, we're a very clever species, but we're not very wise. And this was one of the least wise things we've ever done, because when you start leaving things behind after you're dead and gone and long forgotten,
yes,
that are going to be dangerous to people for, you know, maybe 1,000 generations or 10,000 generations, not to mention what, you know, it's going to be moving through the food chain. And you know, there's like, you know, once you put things like that into the world, there's really no escaping them. You know, we should not be doing that. We should be more humble or more cautious or try to become wiser. You know,
think
of our own little our children.
We already, in other words, this is one of those areas where, in a sense, it's already too late. We already have so much waste that has got to be stored that we're going to be doing that no matter what, Jim. We're going to be storing it.
And that's right.
That's a done deal, man.
But you know, let's not make any more if we have to. And yeah, we're going to have to bite the bullet on that. We're going to have to bite the bullet on a lot of toxic waste. We're going to have to bite the bullet on a lot of things if we really care about future generations.
And speaking of bullets,
mm-hmm.
Let's for a second find out what you think about the war in Iraq. Probably get you into a little trouble here, but do you believe the oil in Iraq was based on energy?
Well, it certainly was a big issue, you know, I think in the picture, and people have found lots of other ways to make money on the war, so it isn't just the oil. I mean, even they thought they'd make a lot more money on the oil, but they're making money in other ways anyway. And it's causing a lot of resentment from what I want to hear in the military.
They are?
Well,
it seems like we're spending a lot of money on this war. I don't know that there's been much return so far.
What I've heard is, Halliburton and, you know, there's some big companies.
Oh, I'm sure, yes, yeah. Halliburton, I'm sure they're doing all right. Yeah. But I mean, basically, nationally, we're spending a pretty big chunk of change.
Huge,
yeah.
Well, and when you think about this and you say, well, okay, what triggered this? If you go back, you'll see...
What triggered it? That's a big debate, Jim.
Yeah.
It wasn't weapons of mass destruction, I don't think.
Yeah, well, it's I think we were probably first on the block with those things.
Bad intelligence? I don't know. Yeah. People say a lot of things, but we're there now, so, I mean, the big question
let's just,
is...
Let's just start with 9/11, because that was the big emotional thing that happened.
But I'm not sure 9/11... Yeah, it was emotional, you're right. Yeah. But I'm not sure that 9/11... is any sort of reason for the Iraq war?
Well,
Are you?
Well, I thought about this, you know, and I thought, and what I was kind of hoping that President Bush would do was to treat this as a criminal act as it was. It was a murder. It was a murder of 3,000 people.
With you all the way.
And no, there. You know, no question about that. And nobody should be doing that. And we should, you know, it's not, to me, it's not about revenge, but it's certainly about getting those people off the street. We don't want to...
Yeah, okay,
we don't want
that,
mess like that running around.
Yeah, but you don't really think, Jim, do you, that the Iraq war was a direct response to 9/11, or do you?
Well, it was all kind of a slippery slope, I guess. You know, like I said, I'm more on the solution side, so I keep my ear open to this stuff, but...
Well, I was going to ask, is the war in Iraq part of the solution? In other words, ultimately, will we get a whole lot of oil?
I don't think so.
That's a no.
It's not going to matter who... even if we got it. I mean, even if everything, you know, turned perfect tomorrow and we got it, you know, it still ain't going to really matter who... And, you know, it may give us a couple more years or something like that. It's like the Arctic, you know, reserve, if they drill that, which will take them 11 years from what I understand, you know, it's a few months of oil, you know, you know, for the, you know, in terms of our consumption level.
A few months of oil. And then, too, we're in competition now with China, of course, you know, on the world oil market, right?
Yeah.
So all of these things, Iraq,
let me back up a second and give you what I think is the succinct view of this is, you know, first of all, if we had been doing what we should have been doing to become more, just forget about the renewable development, just energy efficient, we would have basically pulled all the energy, economic energy out of the Middle East that can be used for war. I mean, this was reported by the Rocky Mountain Institute, all kinds of different groups reported this, you know, like even if we made cars, an average of 32 miles per gallon.
So if we had done all this, we would not have gone to war, Jim?
Well, we wouldn't. I mean, I would say that the money in the Middle East that is now, you know, being used to attack us wouldn't be there.
Good morning, everybody. We'll check into the details for you as they become available, but it would appear that there is breaking news that the president of Saudi Arabia, King Fahd, has died. And again, what that means, a little bit of time will have to tell, or if it's really true, but it does seem to be breaking news on CNN. You might want to take a look. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Bell. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Do you have a quick question for my guest, sir?
Yeah, he had mentioned energy service companies. Actually, the way they seem to work it down in the southeast part of the country, and I actually just got back from China working on it also, it's called performance contracts.
Okay.
And typically, many times it's not necessarily one technology such as solar or a transition from regular lights to fancy lights, things like that, that make it. It's the companies that are offering a combination of new technologies and programs combined to on a performance contract. And
I'm sorry, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's typically 5 to 9 months a return on investment, a payback on performance contracts. That in it's a straight energy consumption. And you talk about the politics a moment ago of energy, which is it is all politics.
Sure.
But when the politics step aside, is when you don't have enough energy. China. I was in China for 2 weeks just recently, a week ago.
Yes, it's a very enlightening experience, isn't it?
It is a very enlightening experience, okay. And I tell you what's going on over there is that the politics play a part, but when it gets to the point where you don't have enough energy, period, and you're turning off skyscrapers for 3 or 4 hours a day,
yes,
and the power's not there, that's when they start looking for alternative things. China's got probably the largest coal production in the world, or at least some of it, and yet it's still not enough. And so they're looking for solar answers. They're looking for, 6 nuclear reactors, I guess, is what I've been told, things of that nature. So it is politics will take a back seat to whatever's going on if the desperation becomes strong enough.
I'm sure that's certainly true. Jim?
Like I said before, it's like it doesn't really matter who does it first. It's like somebody has to step up to the plate and say, hey, look, we're in a very dangerous situation.
Uh-huh.
You know, on a lot of different levels, and we need to, develop a real practical, cost-effective plan to get out of the mess we're in. And, and energy security plays one role in it. I mean, it's like, we say, my payback is a long time, but, what happens when your computer crashes because you don't have energy coming from the normal source? What does that cost? And what happens if you don't have energy and it's 117 degrees for 5 days because you don't have solar? It's almost like the poison is so cheap we have to keep taking it.
Yes, the poison is so cheap we have to keep taking it. And even though the gas prices are high, your statement is also true. People may be hurting, they may be screaming and complaining, but they're still paying. And they're still receiving. So for as long as that can go on, Jim, is there any real chance, any real hope of the kind of change that you're talking about? It may occur on a small scale, but it's not going to really get underway until what this caller said begins to happen. Skyscrapers getting turned off for a couple hours. Oh, yeah. Then you start looking at alternatives.
Well, we have experienced that here. People are kind of aware, but we get lulled, like you said before, with the gas price, they go up and they go down a little bit. And then what a relief. And then they go up a little higher.
Yes.
They always keep going a little bit higher. And we kind of get lulled into it, and it didn't devastate our life, so we put up with it. And with peak oil and things like that looming ahead of us, peak oil is basically the point where there's not enough energy on a day-to-day basis to supply everybody's demand for it.
I'm not sure that's the definition of peak oil.
Well,
are you? I mean, I thought peak oil was when we had the first easy to get half of oil out of the ground, but it isn't where we start to get stopped.
Well, it sort of results in the same thing. That once you reach that point, then it's like you're up against two things. One is the amount of energy that's required to get the oil out of the ground and process it and deliver it versus the amount of energy that's in the oil. So that's another peak that we're heading for that will happen close after the other one, I'm afraid.
How do you change, Jim, the way people think? I'm 60 years old right now, all right? And I'm looking at, if I'm lucky, say another 20 years of life.
Yeah, me too.
Well, the projections for the next 20 years aren't too bad, Jim. Things are going to get tough. They're going to get expensive, but they're still going to be livable. Frankly, the problem is going to be much worse after you and I are gone. And it's almost impossible to keep the human from understanding that and reacting as you would imagine them to. They'll be gone. What do they care?
Well, I guess the way I look at it is I care. And when I looked into my heart and I said, I see little kids and I think about the future and I, I think about, you know, all the generations of people that had to live and die and have kids and raise them long enough to, you know, so they could have kids and all that.
I can clearly hear that you care. What I guess I'm asking about is the rest of most of everybody out there.
Well,
how do you change that?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm just doing the best I can. But I think, you know, when I talk with people, it seems to me that everybody cares, but they're kind of, you know, their lives are, you know, in a way they need care too, because, you know, the average person is, you know, like, you know, working more than one job or, you know, something like that, and, you know, trying to make the rent, and they got a problem with their, you know, with their other, you know, their paramour or whatever, and, you know, like all of us, we, you know, like life is what happens while we're making plans, and I'm, you know, I'm projecting economic plans to make regions energy self-sufficient, but nevertheless, I still think it's possible, and you know, if you present a hopeful vision, practical vision, cost-effective vision, you know, why not? I don't think we're quite that stupid not to take advantage of it if we really understand it.
You may be underestimating us.
Or you mean overestimating?
No, actually. So anyway,
I mean, I'm a bumbly. We're all bumbly, you know. It's like we don't, you know, we don't have to put on airs or anything. It's like the sooner we you know, respect that in ourselves, the sooner we're going to be able to work together and do something good.
No, I think I meant clearly we could be that stupid.
Yeah. No, I heard you.
Yeah, we're kind of going along in a. Well, as I described, how do you change a human being who doesn't think past the end of his life particularly? How do you do that? That's a sea change in a person's...
Well, first of all, look at slavery and look at women having the vote. I mean, that wasn't like all of a sudden 51% of the people signed up and said, yeah, this is a good idea. And it was actually a relatively small number of people, and it happened, you know, and almost like faster than anybody imagined when it finally did happen.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so big things happen, and I think when you really present a good idea, and like when I say I'm presenting this idea, I'm presenting this book and all that, you know, take it my truth with a small t, and I think we all should present our truth with a small t. You know, it's the best we come up with so far. That's all I'm sharing. I think there's some good ideas there, and I'm hoping people will take a, you know, give it a fair look.
How about a small f, like fusion? Now, we talked about nuclear. Well, there are problems attendant with that. But fusion could be on, you know, it could be another 10, 15 years away. But when we get to fusion, it doesn't have the byproducts, but it's got a lot of real energy. What do you think?
Well, if I can cover only 20% of my buildings and parking lots with solar panels and get all the energy I need with no danger of anything, you know, no 100 million degrees centigrade temperature to hold... I mean, magnetic bottles don't hold neutrons. I mean, yeah, you can contain the positive and negative charges, but you're not going to contain the neutrons. So the result will be the whole plant will become radioactive.
Well, okay, we don't have fusion yet, but I'm presuming that
Well,
someday...
but I mean, solar panels are warrantied by Shell Solar, BP Petroleum, Sharp Solar.
Absolutely.
Japan,
what about the,
for 25 years?
But what about the fact, Jim, that producing that massive a number of solar panels in itself is going to hit the economy really hard? Those are not cheap to make.
Well, they're, you know, comparable to computer chips and all that, and they have been going down. I know now here, even I'm like Germany has really kind of retarded the reduction in price because they are buying so much of them up on the world market. You know, they're doing what, you know, something akin to what we should be doing here. And they're, you know, kind of in a pretty far north country, too.
What is it that prompted the Germans to act so precipitously, so quickly, compared to us, as we still sit back and basically do nothing?
I guess it probably has some influence. You know, the Green Party there has had some influence on it. But I think, you know, I'm more focused on my own neighborhood. But you know, I think people are making good arguments that, hey, this makes more sense in terms of security, in terms of a surety of energy, in terms of pricing of, I mean, solar energy, once you have the capacity to collect it, the energy part doesn't go up in price.
Well, basically true. What kind of life do modern solar cells have?
Well, they're warranted for 25 years.
Warranty?
I mean, Shell Solar warranties them for 25 years. British Petroleum warranties them for, and this is a performance warranty. It's not that it fails, it's that if the production goes down to a certain level.
Right.
there's a little bit of, you know, there's some things that need to be done better in terms of being able to monitor them. Because, I mean, at the food co-op where I'm on the board, we have a 30 kilowatt system, and you know, it provides about 30%, 35% of our energy. But it's hard to, you know, well, is any part of it malfunctioning? It's sort of, we're sort of trying to figure out, well, how can we measure that so if there is any problem, we can attend to it right away? Because it's, if it isn't working properly, it's actually money out of our pocket.
That's right. That's correct. So you feel there's not sufficient monitoring available for this stuff yet?
A little, well, like when you're, like if you're net metered out, like a lot of people, you know, they put in enough so that they're actually pushing more kilowatt hours into the grid each year than they're using.
Right.
That you can measure. That's not, but when you're like a business and you're producing 30%, it's like, well, energy prices are going up and down, like we said before. So it's kind of hard to keep track of where is, you know, what is that system doing? And we actually have four systems because we wanted to avoid the, you know, net metering costs, or not the net metering costs, but the, you know, they were in, if you're not on smaller meters, you're over 200 watts, you, if the price of energy goes up, then they ding you for that that increased energy cost. So
right.
we insulate ourselves by doing it that way. But it, you know, it's a little, would be better to be able to, you know, understand exactly what's happening on a more moment by moment basis.
Well, I, you know, going back again to make this happen, take the average homeowner out there listening to us right now,
mm-hmm.
right? Homeowner. Can they go out, Jim, and buy solar panels and the equipment it will take to power their home? And will it be economically feasible for them to do that or not?
Well, if they focus on efficiency first, you know, really just do everything to, you know, it's not.
No,
the,
I just want to focus on economics.
Well, but I mean, but see, that's where the economic comes in, because you can save energy much less, you know, for much less money than you can produce it, no matter how you're producing it. And so the first step is that you put in that new refrigerator, you put in better lights, you do the things that are going to cut down your, you know, going to give you the same energy service, but you're not going to need very much energy to supply it. Then you size your system. If you do that, you know, you're maybe probably talking about maybe 8, 9, 10 year payback. There are some companies though that will do.
All right, stop right there. That should be enough. You really feel as though the average household could replace the hoggy appliances with good and efficient ones, and then scale it and go out and get the solar and the wind and the rest and have a payback in 8 or 9 years.
Yes.
That's not bad.
I mean, if you do the solar by itself, you know, like in your situation, it's probably a little more severe, but, you know, you're looking at maybe a 20-year payback. You know, that's, at current interest rates, it's not too bad, but when you throw in the security and all that sort of stuff, you know, it sort of makes sense even economically. But the efficiency improvements is the key. Because if you can get the same energy service for a lot less energy,
yes,
you don't have to pay very much for those panels.
Speaking of panels, has the price of panels, you mentioned that Germany is buying a lot. Is that,
yeah.
And you're suggesting what? That the price is artificially being held up by the German demand?
Yeah, and this is reflected in most of the solar companies are like doubling or close to doubling their production, whether it's Sharp or BP or Shell or whatever. And also, even though there is the pressure, there people, I've talked with some local installers here, and they're still getting panels around 3 to 3.15, maybe a little under 3 per peak watt, which is, you know, when you bought yours, it was much higher than that.
Yes.
Still been coming down.
All right. Well, that's encouraging news.
And
plus,
then,
if the world can look at Germany, and Germany actually solves its problems to a large degree, there's a lot of incentive there, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, they're not taking advantage of, you know, they're doing it as foolishly as we are, in my view.
Oh.
They're just doing more of it. But there's other, and what I'm, you know, pointing out in the book, that there's some very intelligent ways to do it that were, you know, it's all gravy, and you get the security too.
Why aren't they doing it the smart way?
What? It's new ideas. I mean, I'm presenting, you know, with the help of my friends here in San Diego, a new way of looking at this. You know, to what I saw was, is like, well, you know, if you look at solar by itself, or even wind, unless you have a lot of wind, you know, the payback is a long time.
If I were a billionaire, which I'm certainly not, Jim, and I would, you know, I looked at investing a couple hundred million dollars into this, how would the return that you claim what kind of return would I get compared to other investments I might make with that $200 million?
From my understanding, after talking with people in the energy service industry, they call them ESCOs.
Yes, yes. Is what?
Is that it's a very good business, and I think their main problem is that it almost sounds too good to be true, even though it's totally true.
Try me in terms of a return. What kind of return might I get versus other places I could put my money?
Well, the last time I checked, they were getting on their money, and I think it's probably come down a little bit now because the interest rates in general were higher at the time. But, you know, they were getting something like 14% on the money that came from the utility consortium.
It's pretty good.
That's a big return.
Yeah, it's a big return.
And then they got a profit on top of that. In the spreadsheet that's in my book, we assumed a 15%. You know, profit, energy, you know, if we were going to have to borrow the money, it would be the energy, or whoever's borrowing it, doesn't really matter, would be 15% return on the money and in terms on top of that profit of, you know, to basically do the plan where the work is done first and you just keep paying your utility bill and it gets paid off.
Well, that's all very convincing stuff. And you're suggesting that all of this information is in your book.
Yeah.
So,
I talk about becoming water and food self-sufficient as well in this region.
So, you do?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. This is a worthwhile book. And where can you get it? Once again, your website is?
www.jimbell.com. I like the way you say it better. and then you click on Jim's new book, which is first page that comes up on the left-hand side. You know, there's something at the top. That's the opening page. And then you click on Jim's new book. Then the title comes up, which is Creating a Sustainable Economy and Future on Our Planet, the San Diego Tijuana Region, a Case Study. So this gets into the nuts and bolts of, you know, how to do this, you know, and really, to a certain degree, it's almost like a perspective to sell this to the public, to sell this to the average taxpayer and voter, that here's a wonderful opportunity that not only that we can take advantage of, but pretty much anywhere in the planet, you know, short of Antarctica.
And you're doing this completely on a non-profit basis, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, I did print up 6,000 copies of the book, but and I'm giving out most of those for free, too.